4, verses 11 through 16. And he gave some as apostles and some as prophets, and some as evangelists and some as pastors and teachers, for the equipping of the saints, for the work of service, and to the building up of the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature man, to the measure of the stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ. As a result, we are no longer to be children, tossed here and there by waves, and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by craftiness and deceitful scheming. But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into him who is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body, being fitted and held together by that which every joint supplies, according to the proper working of each individual part, causes the growth of the body for the building up of itself in love.
Okay, this evening we're going to be looking at the topic of supplying my part, and I guess you can kind of extrapolate from the scripture reading what we're talking about here. As you look at the church at Ephesus, we probably know more about it than any other church of the New Testament, and therefore we're given a complete viewpoint of the church, of all the things that could be on the good side and also on the bad. We're with the inception of the church in Acts 18 and 19, as Paul starts it, so we know how churches can begin. Paul writes a letter to them in Ephesians, which we'll be looking at a good part of. So it covers a lot of things that are both good and bad, and especially about how to grow individually and as the individuals come together in the church. And then Revelation, the second chapter, kind of shows us, you know, at the end of its ministry almost, where, you know, things begin to go bad. They lost their first love. And then we have a letter to Timothy by Paul. Timothy's been left in Ephesus. And so it kind of helps, you know, then also see the things that Timothy can do for him to help encourage them and build them up. In our text that was just read, Ephesians 4, 11 through 16, we see that each member of the church is to supply something to the strength of the church. And that's something we have to kind of let sink in. You know, we can easily go on in our daily things that, well, you know, the preachers are there, the elders are there, you know, other people are doing their part, you know, all I have to do is show up. And sometimes we bring that from, that kind of attitude from the other places we used to worship. We all come from different backgrounds, it seems. And we bring a lot of it with us. If you're Catholic or Protestant or whatever, you have a tendency just to want to sit there and let the priest take care of everything. Unfortunately, bad news for you, we're all priests now. And so we all got to take care of the business. So we're going to be looking at this evening about the things that we need to be concerned about. And first of all, just to stress that we must realize that each member is important. And therefore we can need to help each other, and each person has to realize how important they are to the group. In 1 Corinthians 12, beginning verse 22, Paul says, on the contrary, it is much truer that the members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary. And those members of the body which we deem less honorable, on these we bestow more abundant honor, and our unseemly members come to have more abundant seemliness. Now you may have to consider that for a little bit, but just look at yourselves. You know, what things do you highlight? One of the things that's kind of growing out is, you know, the makeup on the women. How useful is an eyebrow? You know, but we pay special attention to, you know, penciling it in, or an eyelash, you know, or something like that. And so we give more greater glory or honor to the things that, you know, really how much of a part of your body is it? Yeah, but it does have a function. An eyelash does protect the eye and stuff. So it's given us pause as we consider the body, how just about everything's important. I know at one, in fact, I just flashed on something. I remember one time scientists thought that there were 96 organs in the body that weren't necessary. And as the years proceeded, they're finding more and more that, maybe they are necessary for this or whatever. So we are fearfully, wonderfully made. God has designed the whole package together so that, it becomes, in our bodies, a fit lesson for the church. This is why Paul draws upon it over and over again. All are needed regardless of ability. The more prominent as well as the insignificant, though, really none should be considered insignificant. This is illustrated by Paul by the different parts of the human body. As we go further into this, each one should come to know each other. As we look at 1 Corinthians 12, beginning at 25, that there should be no division in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all members rejoice with it. Again, think of the body. If you're in an athletic event and your legs take you across the finish line first, the hands are there too. So everything rejoices in it. So again, we ought to bring that into the church. Because we are to consider each other, this is from Hebrews, the 10th chapter, let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. To consider means to examine as to the makeup. We look at each other, what our weaknesses are, our strengths are, and help with the weaknesses, also combine the strengths. To provoke means to stir up, to excite. We need to get each other excited about working for God on a daily basis. We realize that we are members one of another from Romans 12:5. For we who are many are one body in Christ and individually members of one another. We're a team. This is what we come together for in the church, as a team, to learn how to work together. And a lot of times we let that slide. And I'm preaching to myself here too, so I have to constantly rethink things and get down to what I'm supposed to be doing. We are to love one another, John 13, Jesus talking to his disciples. In fact, this is a new commandment he says, I give to you, that you should love one another, not necessarily that that's new, but you should love one another as I have loved you. That's his emphasis in this. So it brings love to a higher standard, as we see how Christ loved. And because of that love, Galatians 6:10, so then while we have opportunity, life is short, while we still have the opportunity to do it, let us do good to all men. But if we have to concentrate on something, especially to those of the household of faith, look to our fellow brethren first for our time, our resources and stuff, and then to the world. The next section is just that each person can supply something to make the church strong. God set certain gifts in the early church. Ephesians 4:11 talks about what God gave were apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. It's not talking about those people received gifts. What the church received was the gifts of apostles, prophets, evangelists, and teachers. And those gifts are to help the church, do something. This is why, as it moves on from our reading that Justin did, it's for the purpose of equipping or furnishing the saints with something. Okay, why have a teacher if you're not going to listen to them? Why have a teacher if it's not in your mind to learn what is being taught and to begin to apply it? I mean, sometimes we just forego the simplest understanding of what is required of us as Christians. The equipping of the saints for the work of service to the building up of the body of Christ. And then go down to verse 15. But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects to Him. So like this morning we mentioned, the goal of our growing is to become Christ-like. But now we have to bring the body, not just ourselves, but the whole body in alignment with that. Since He is the head, we got to give Him a body, you know, that's worthy of the head. I mean, what's in your thoughts and minds and whatever, heart, are things that hopefully are noble. And if Christ, the most noblest, and so we have to give Him the equipment, the body, you know, the engine, in order to carry out the things He wants done in this life. And this is the way we should be looking at the church, because that's what it's set up for. The saints are to be perfected, that equipped or trained in the things they need to do. They then are ready to work, to do the work of ministry or service as a fellowship, service to themselves, their fellows, and to God. And as a result, the church will be edified, built up like an edifice, a building. Each part, generally every part of a building has to be there, whether it's, you know, the foundation, the rebar, you know, the metal supports, you know, the glass that goes in, however they put it, you know, either the outside, you know, for the strength, or the inside to make it comfortable to live in. The chairs, the rugs, the paintings, you know, painting doesn't do much for the support of the building, but it does make it more livable on the inside, an easier workspace, you know, for those that occupy it. So as a result, the church should be edified both in number, that it should be building up in its numbers, and also in its spiritual strength. This working would continue, although in due time the apostles and prophets would be replaced with a written word. They would give us everything we need. Yeah, so ready reference to go to, 66 books. And to complete this context of Ephesians, verse 16, where it says, from whom the whole body, being fitted and held together by that which each joint supplies, according to the proper working of each individual part, causes the growth of the body for the building of itself in love. Now, for our purposes here, this is probably the most significant verse. The whole body is to be fitted together. Yeah. What happens when a hand falls off? First of all, the hand ceases to function, and pretty much that side of the body becomes totally less effective. So everything has to be there. Everything has to fit in place. When it talks about this joined together is compacted by each supplying something. Okay, if in your body, these muscles in the forearm were doing all their function, and the shoulder arms were doing all their function, but the biceps in between decided to take a holiday, what good's the rest of the arm? Okay. In order for them to function, in fact, even the muscles that are there, the ones that push the hand out and pull back, they all have to be functioning for the whole unit to function. I mean, all the movements we're doing, everything's got to be working together. You know, and if some aren't, then what you're going to be doing is, you know, hitting things, slapping yourself in the face or whatever. So it's not only going to be there supplying what it can, but learning to function in coordination with everything else. Then they work effectively. Then the whole body grows. Notice the body doesn't grow until each part is doing its job. Okay? And man, if you've been on this earth, you know, any amount of time, you realize, you know, a couple of months ago I was out running 4 miles and then I got a bum foot. Okay, so now I can barely walk on the foot. So the workout is gone, you know, TAD someplace else, which means, you know, the energy, you know, the endurance is not there. So every little job I'm doing, I'm huffing and puffing, you know, all because of the dumb foot. Everything else is suffering. Okay, the whole body begins to shut down. So we have to consider, you know, we are a vital part of it. You can start to consider, what if I'm not there? What if I'm not doing my part? Okay, then the whole body begins to strain. It may be, you know, the other members maybe start to be concerned about you. You know, spending time trying to figure out, you know, what can we do to help? Okay, you've caused a worry and anxiety. You know, if we love one another, then there's going to be this concern. Okay, and you brought that on by your inabilities. Or I should say, not exercising the abilities you have. As we look at all this, you know, we can look at some of the things, you know, just a quick list of things we can do. And I start off with, you know, financial aid. I'm going to get through this. What I'd rather do is give you something. If you got your Bibles, you know, please turn in to Romans, the 12th chapter. I don't know why this verse wasn't put in here. As you look, starting at verse 6, so Romans 12, 6 through 8, you maybe add that to your outline. It says, since we have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let each exercise them accordingly. So yeah, you can't just go say, well, I'm not a preacher, I'm not a teacher. Well, you've been given something by God, you better find out what it is. If prophecy, according to the proportion of his faith, or teaching, yeah, you want to put it that way. Most prophecy is teaching. If service in his serving, or he who teaches in his teaching, or he who exhorts in his exhortation, he who gives with liberality. It could be perhaps God has blessed you with the ability to make money. Some people have that. He who leads with diligence, he who shows mercy with cheerfulness. Okay, so each action, you know, there's an abundance of things that are possibilities. Okay, and they might be considered gifts to begin with. But that doesn't mean that, you know, you can't go beyond that. Because, you know, even if it's a gift, you're going to acquire, God is willing to give you other gifts. You know, if you're willing to develop the skill for them. And I've used myself as an example of this in the past. If I'm going by my early track record, I'd never be behind a pulpit. Okay. I never wanted to preach. Never had the ability to teach. Okay. Didn't have the knowledge, didn't have the training, didn't have the voice. At one point, almost lost everything, couldn't even talk. It depends on what you're willing to do. If you're willing to grow in the knowledge, if you're willing to sit there and perhaps swallow some pride. Okay, once you have the knowledge, you want to share it with people. You want to. And you will find the ability to do that. Now, it might be getting up and teaching, or it might be writing books, or it might be, you know, the latest, you know, Twittering or something like that. But, you know, it's out there. You have an ability to communicate. And to say you can't be a teacher, Paul has an interesting line in Romans, I think it's 3. If you bear the name of Jew and you rely upon the law and boast in God and approve the things that are acceptable, you that are teachers, do you teach yourself? I mean, the first thing you got to learn in this life is to teach yourself. How do you learn? You know, you teach yourself to do that. There's not one of you that doesn't have a subject they're interested in. Whether it's, you know, Phil here, he's interested in radio control stuff, and he learns that. Most of you learned to drive. That's a very hard subject. Most of you have learned to speak English to some extent. Hey, that's the hardest language in the world, on the planet right now, and you've learned it. Don't tell me you don't know how to do stuff. You've learned something. You got this far. Okay, most of you learned what was necessary to become Christians because you became one. You can share that with somebody. Okay. The only boundaries we have are what we put in here, self-induced. But notice this line I left out from 2 Corinthians 8. I am not speaking this as a commandment, but as proving through the earnestness of others the sincerity of your love. Show God how much you love Him and how much you love the souls around you by taking on more, you know, than you normally would. I had a roommate one time who had this little statue on his desk, and there's this big wedge of cake and this little tiny bug at the bottom of it, and he's just bloated, you know, and he couldn't even move anymore, and just a, you know, a small dent in the cake was made. And the caption goes, "Always take on more than you can possibly handle, or you'll never know you're doing all you can do." Okay. So you get beyond yourself. Yeah. It's, yeah, at least you've made more progress than you would if you didn't do nothing or didn't do anything. So we follow back into colloquial expression. Sometimes just your presence at services. And it's not just a good idea. Paul says, you know, not forsaking our own assembly as the habit of some. Sometimes we get a habit of doing that, forsaking the assembly. Now, I may be stepping on some toes here really hard. Okay. How does the church grow if periodically during the year everybody goes, phew, you know, and the membership goes from whatever it is, 80 to like 45? How does the church keep functioning, you know, especially if that keeps happening? You know? And we can say, yeah, well, we've got recreation, we've got family, whatever, but you're missed. You are missed. How come the family can't come see you? And then you can bring them to church. And then instead of being down to 45, we're up to 120. Sometimes we have to rethink our lifestyles. And it's not just me. I've read articles recently where a lot of preachers are moaning, you know, the membership is on the road. They have the RVs, and you know, when they have an opportunity, they're gone. And it's hard to, you know, complete classes, you know, do series lessons or anything when most of the people are gone. If it's your team in football, you're there every time they play. Okay? This is the team that's more important than anything. You know, we should be here, you know, every time it's played. Something to think about anyway. We should be here to worship God. We should be here to edify each other. We should be here to be edified. We should be here to restore the fallen. Notice the codicil in this. It goes, brethren, even if a man is caught in any trespass. Okay, now we're to restore such a one, but notice who it's left to. You that are spiritual, do you qualify? Are you spiritual enough to go handle the job of restoring someone who's being caught up in a trespass, no matter what the trespass is? Spiritual means you're willing to handle the problems and to be able to do it in a spirit of gentleness. Okay? There's a lot that God expects of us from our character and our nature and the way we handle things. We should be growing to that. Just really quickly, we're to be, you know, an example of life in the community. This is why Jesus called his disciples salt, light, city set on a hill. Teaching others by, you know, opportunities that arise, sanctifying Christ in our hearts, being able to give an answer to anyone that asks us, a reason for the hope that's within us. And again, with gentleness and reverence, or meekness and fear, whatever your translation says. Yeah. Do you understand those qualities? Not only to those on the outside, in the things that you've heard, Paul tells Timothy, what you've heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, these entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. We need to be constantly looking at the next generation of the church. Even as we're moving into a society that's going to be attacking the church more and more, that shouldn't be a problem. That should make us even stronger. That should make our families, you know, better bonded, our children more versed in the scriptures, Are young people preparing themselves to be more and more an aide to the church as elders and deacons and teachers and preachers? And be aware that, for the most part, as we look in the scriptures, there are so many that fail. You know, it's not a given because you're baptized. You know, there's a lot expected of you beyond that point, you know, to try to keep you from swimming away, you know, once you're in the water. I mean, we give a few examples here. There are some, like the man in 1 Corinthians editor handout 5:1. Here it is actually reported that there is an immorality among you, an immorality of such a kind as does not exist even among the Gentiles. The church sometime, as it begins to slip, its members can be worse than the world around it. Okay, there's a psychology there that has to be considered. Yeah, look more at Hebrews 6 and Hebrews 10 about those that had experienced the Spirit and then had gone back in the world. People in the church, like Diotrephes, who loved to have the preeminence in 3 John 9. Here's a guy who was a problem in the church. He needed to be thrown out of it. Yeah, so he learns better. Or those that were in. Yeah, here's an individual that was following an apostle around and saw all the miracles. And Paul goes, now that I'm in trouble and need help, here's Demas, who loves the present world and has deserted me. In fact, that word desert there is the same word as forsake in Hebrews 10, where it says, do not forsake the assembling of yourselves, because it's the same as God sees as deserting the brethren in their time of need. There's also Philippians 2:14, where Paul warns them, do all things without grumbling or disputing. As we get into just individuals that have fallen away, things like this, you know, constantly complaining about things, you know, things about the preacher. I got a long list of things people said about my sermons. I like the one where one goes, there's too many scriptures in it, and then there's not enough. Or it's on a college level, and my 8-year-old couldn't understand it, or you bring it down, and it's not smart enough. You know, whatever. You can't, you know, this is a mixed group. You can't please everybody. If you try to, you end up pleasing nobody. Just to grumble and complain, you know, what was the reason that Israel lost 600,000 men in the desert? 600,000. Because they kept grumbling, they kept complaining. Yeah, it sends a bad message, an undercurrent, and everything else through the whole body. I mean, if your brain's got a bad attitude, it'll start showing up everyplace else. Now, it's not just you. This is something God can hold against you. Paul says, do you not know that you, as a group, probably the King James says ye, to let you know it's a plural, that ye are the temple of God. That as you come together and assemble, you now make up God's temple, where the Spirit is. The Spirit of God dwells in you. Don't you know that? Okay. As we worship here, God's with us. Christ is with us. He's partaking the Lord's Supper with us. That's what he said he's doing. The Spirit is here. If anyone destroys the temple of God, God will destroy him, for the temple of God is holy. As we come together and assemble, you may look at it as a social club, but it's an entity that Christ came to build and died for, and it is holy. And you've got to be careful how you conduct yourself. In fact, that's what Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy 3, verse 15. In case I don't get there, you know, I'm writing this that you may know how one should conduct themselves in the assembly of God, in the church of God, you know, which is the temple of God. For God will destroy him, for the temple of God is holy, and that is what you are. And then Romans 14:12, each one of us shall give an account of himself to God. You know, what have you done for him? Okay. I think it's on another sermon coming up, but yeah, I can inject it here too. You know, most of you are familiar with this little, you know, proverb, whatever, where it goes that what you are is God's gift to you. That is, most of us have something in common. We come to this life with a fairly strong body that's capable of growing, developing, maturing, you know, getting stronger. We've got brains that increase. That's, you know, those are gifts of God. You're not animals. You have the ability to think, to reason, to communicate, you know, to have ideals and dreams and whatever. God has given you that as a gift. Okay? And he's also giving you the ability to acquire skills, to develop, you know, to go all sorts of directions, to conceive of things and achieve them. That's God's gift to you. Your gift to God is what you do with all that. It's like, you know, having a building and someone goes, here's the land, here's all the lumber, the nails, the equipment, blueprints and everything else. And you just sit there and look at it all the time. And complain about, oh, I can't do this. Get a book and read how to build a building. You know, we've already got the book. Yeah, you know, how to build the church and how to build ourselves, edify ourselves. Okay? And that's our responsibility. That's what God requires of us. And if we really love God, you know, as we claim to do, then, you know, we will try to build something in ourselves and in the church. There's something to be proud to give God when he comes. We just look at that church for the, you know, 21st century. Will he find in us the same edifice that he put together in the first century and expects to stand for, you know, 2,000 years? Or if we let it deteriorate, go soft, you know, whatever, fall apart, you know, get infused with other ideals and teachings and everything else. Yeah. Now, in the conclusion, we have one last little comment in the lessons of yours. Whether you realize it or not, you are either building up the Lord's church or you're destroying it. Cromwell once said, he who ceases to be good ceases to be better. Or ceases to be better ceases to be good. That's the way it was. So you have to keep moving. You got to keep working on yourself. Even later in life, in the 70s, 80s, you know, your brain can still... I think one time the Supreme Court, you know, in most of the offices of the United States government were occupied by people in their 70s. And it was a good government, too. Headed up by Reagan in his 70s. Of course, he had to take a nap at times, but... Yeah, you know, he was still growing. So take a nap, you know, and keep going. But when you're not helping, if you're not working to build the church up, if you're just sitting there means that you help tearing it down because you're giving other people the idea that they can be dormant also and stagnant. And pretty soon that spreads. You know, that's a little leaven that leavens the whole lump. So as an invitation, you know, fire you up and stimulate you. It's like, you know, what can we do to help you? What can we do to fire you up? What can we do to excite you, you know, into serving God better? You know, whatever your needs are, please let us know as we stand to sing.